You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hey, y'all. Bayou Benders here to talk to you about the latest from our sponsors, DraftKings.
This weekend's UFC 262 is sure to be a can't-miss event. Every punch, kick, and knockout means so much more with DraftKings lineup on the line. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of UFC, is giving you a shot at huge cash prizes. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering all customers a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete in a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Plus, don't forget about basketball and hockey, where DraftKings has even more money up for grabs throughout the week. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN for your shot at millions of dollars in total prizes through the week. That's promo code THPN to get a shot at millions of dollars in total fucking prizes only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Hello, you're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Corey, a.k.a. Bayou Benders, alongside Mason Dixon, and this is Habs Nightly, your hubs for Habs content. What's up, Mason? Welcome back, bud.
Fucking caught me off guard there. I thought you were gonna retake that.
Nah, fuck it. One and done.
One and done here at Habs Nightly always. I'm good. I'm tired. I'm currently recording, laying down in my bed right now.
Jesus, you know, like this is probably way over your head, but Marvin Gaye did like a live set, and people were the documentary I watched. It was so blown away. This dude was just hitting high notes on just laying back on a couch. Band's playing around and he's just laying on the couch, dude, just belting it. Marvin Gaye slaps, dude. Anyway, yeah, my boys had a tough one. Gets off at one, goes back for 11. The dedication. Oh,
the biggest bullshit ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
got
I
got you with the McDouble, huh? Double. Basically pulled double.
I worked from 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Saturday night. And these fuckers at McDonald's booked me again at 11 a.m. on Sunday. So I got to my house at like 1:30. And I told them last night, I was like, you know, when I wake up late, you guys have no right to be mad at me. And they laughed thinking I was joking. Nah, I rolled in there at 11:45 this morning.
As you should.
And I felt no guilt. My conscience was clear.
My man, you're young. I've seen so many employees try to take advantage of like that youth and just call you in last minute. Or I know, like you said, it was on the schedule for like a fucking month. But to schedule young guys like that or young people like that is bullshit. And I love that this generation just like, I don't give a fuck, dude. Like, I don't give a fuck coming in when I can. You know, you're not about to break me. Fucking minimum wage, baby. Like, fuck that.
I think at the end of the day, like, no job is worth, like, you being there all the time, right? If it's not your passion.
100%. I agree with that. Because I did that, you know, like, let me be, for all you young fucking people out there, let me be the one to tell you that if you're afraid that, oh, I don't know if my job would let me take a week off to go do something fun, fuck them. It's probably not the job you're going to be with in 5 years. Fuck it. Go on your vacation, because I spent my entire 20s chasing money and staying, you know, truthful to a company that at the end of the day, didn't give a fuck about me, you know, just needed me to be a body there. So, you know, as you're young, go do that adventurous shit, dude. Try things. Fucking don't show up for work. I don't care. You know, just don't be afraid to think that, you know, like you got to be perfect for, you know, your first or your second job. They don't give a fuck about you. You know, if you're not passionate there, fuck them.
Well, yeah. And I think too, like, I think everyone has to, like, for me personally, like, I'm in this job and it's like a job to pay for school, right? But like, 100%. I wouldn't want to spend 12 hours every day doing that. I'd rather spend 12 hours every day doing this, right? Because this is passion.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're on the subject of passion, I think we got to talk about that Habs-Leafs game. I unfortunately, if we're what, they'll be listening to this Monday. So if you're aware, the game on Saturday was working. I sadly was aligned. And I have a confession to make. It might get me crucified, but I took my break at the start of the second and the Habs were winning 2-0. I hadn't watched the game at all. Looked like the boys were playing good. And I may have watched about 5 minutes of that hockey game. And every time I turned that game on, the Leafs scored within 30 seconds. So I'm sorry. I cursed the Habs. They lost because of me. We can't blame the boys. I should have just put down my fucking phone after the first goal, but I was selfish. I wanted to watch the Habs beat the Leafs, and I fucked it for us. So that's my piece. I'm sorry I let my passion ruin the Habs' chances at beating the Leafs on Saturday. Yeah, in reality, you did watch the game, right, Corey?
Yes, I did. It was it was the first full game I've watched since my mom's hospital stuff. And I'm not going to lie, the boys played decent. You know, I saw a lot of people calling for fucking Jake Allen's head. I don't agree with that. There was, you know, like the first goal that Engvall kid who's on like a fucking 4-goal streak the past like, you know, 4 games, or it's a 3-goal, whatever. It is what it is. I mean, fuck, dude. You know, there's a lot of shit right in front of him, and he just softly drops. It just slid across the fucking ice, dude. Like, just in between 7 fucking players, you know. He just couldn't see it. Just wasn't tracking well enough. But I think we played pretty decent in the beginning. You know, we obviously were winning, but just Toronto just fucking hit a switch and it just became us trying to regain the momentum the entire game after that. And it was just, you know, we got the best of us. You can watch this game and be like, damn, this is a team that needs a fucking break. This is a team that's hurting. But there's one thing I got to say is I don't understand. And then we can go into it a little bit more, but you got your youthful player, you know, Cole Caulfield, we'll say it, whatever. There's no reason for him to be sitting on the bench when you know, he's not hurt. Yeah, he does need a bit of a rest, but like if we're going down to, you know, to take the goalie out, going empty net, there's no way in hell this kid shouldn't be on the ice. And, you know, there was a moment where he just looked like he knew what he was doing. You know, like he does, but I mean – he just looked hungry. He looked hungry the entire game. Took a bit of a hit. Wasn't too bad. Got up. Went on a. Oh man, it was almost fucking beautiful, poetic actually. Fucking he went on a breakaway, caught a puck. Just guy fished it out. Really great stick play on him. Just got him right down at the bottom, right in front of the
Muzzin.
Goalie. Muzzin, yeah, Muzzin. Right?
Yeah, that's when I tuned in and the Leafs started playing.
Yeah, and they really amped it up at that point. But, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There was moments where we looked really good. The problem is that, you know, like, we're just so fucking hurt. There's guys playing that are injured. You know, we saw Philip Deneau. And Philip Deneau not playing was such a big problem. This was not, you know, he couldn't control it. But this is not the game that we need to lose, you know, Philip Deneau in, you know.
Well, are you aware of what his injury is?
What they were saying online was it was a concussion. They kept saying it during the game, I believe, as well.
Yeah, so Deneau's out with a concussion. And I just, I gotta say it. This team doesn't have a shot in hell against the Toronto Maple Leafs if Philip Deneau isn't playing.
Yeah, and you know, this was a great game for everybody who's been kind of shitting on Philip Deneau as of late, because it was kind of, I wouldn't say understandable in the beginning, because it was more of us just being stands and just being, you know, we expect more from you. But like, you really saw it in this game. There was moments where we really needed the help. I'll tell you one thing. I'm super proud of Nick Suzuki's play as of late. I think he went 9-10 on the faceoffs. He was remarkable in a game where we were just kind of, we couldn't get a faceoff to save our fucking life, it seemed. But Nick Suzuki was on top of that shit. There was really great moments in the game, but I'm telling you, dude, they controlled that game. Once they found their rhythm, it was over. Fucking William Nylander, can't stand his fucking face. You know, skate blade comes off. We have an opportunity. They're a man down. We don't put it away. This dude snaps the fucking blade on and scores. It was a nasty fucking rebound goal too. So it was just, you know, Jake Allen really couldn't fucking do anything about it.
Well, that was also, if we're like, the first goal was
the Engvall one where it just kind of skated across the surface of the ice.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. I'm thinking of the second goal.
Yeah. You're thinking, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It was a line mismatch, mm-hmm. which I think we've seen Ducharme get caught on a lot this year, in which the fourth line, you know, had a great shift, brought into the offensive zone. They should have changed.
Yeah.
Because then once the Leafs cleared it, the top line was coming out and they fucking torched them for a goal. That goal's not scored. I understand Philip Deneau was injured. It's not scored if Philip Deneau's line's on the ice. It's probably not scored if Suzuki's out there, right? So that was a little frustrating. I do want to highlight what you said about Nick Suzuki, though. He has been playing absolutely amazingly lately. This is what we want to see from him. Keeping in mind, this is still a 56-game season this year. He's gone through some, you know, tough first two seasons to break into the league. I think his development is right on track. I think he's projecting to be a star. I really do. Like, you know, we talk about guys getting a sophomore slump. Suzuki, I think, is still going to have more points than he did last year, and he's on pace to destroy it in an 82-game season. And I'm just looking back to the playoffs last year when he had, was it 9-10? 9 points in 10 games, 10 points in 10 games.
It was something like that.
Well, he's coming into the playoffs hot again. And it's looking like hopefully he's going to pick it up, because Lord knows we're going to need Nick Suzuki, not only offensively, but especially defensively, with the loss of Philip Deneau. Deneau recently, I was looking at advanced stats on from Jay Fresh on Twitter.
Jay Fresh, baby.
Yeah, Deneau was the second rated, I forget what it was, basically like, end all be all stat for advanced analytics on defensive forwards, he was second.
The Selke stat.
Yeah, the Selke stat. And Deneau, that was Deneau. Deneau was way up mm-hmm. there. I think he's once again proven how valuable he is. And Suzuki was in the top 10 as well.
Oh, great.
So, you know, not only is he getting her done offensively,
he's a remarkable player just on all fronts.
Just a two-way forward.
Yeah.
And it's looking like, I forget, was it Drouin, the Patrice Bergeron comparisons? Obviously, mm-hmm. he's not there yet, but if he can turn into anything close to Patrice Bergeron,
then we got money, dude.
Yeah, we won. Yeah.
But yeah, your stat though, his playoffs, he had 4 goals for 7 points in the playoffs.
And how many games was it?
10 games. So he was rolling. Games. He was rolling. But yeah, so what I wanted to talk about though, because I had just mentioned the faceoffs, right? We were 38%, right? That is probably our season lowest. And the final goal, the Mitch Marner goal, like it opens up. The goal is off of a fucking faceoff, right? But I mean, if they're 63% won the faceoff the entire night, you know that's coming. And I don't say you prepare for it, but if they're winning that so much, why not go for it, you know? And the Leafs are strong enough and they're they're skilled enough to get away with a play like that. And if we're just they're pumping us on the fucking on the dot, you know they're gonna try it. And sure enough, they did, and it just caught Allen off guard. You know, it was just kind of a miserable performance on the dot for us. Eric Stahl, 15%. It was not his game. I mean, Jake Evans and Nick Suzuki were our, you know, saving graces of that 38%. It was just tough. It was real tough, not gonna lie.
Yeah. In talking about the faceoff circle, I think like we do a lot of bashing as a fan base and sometimes on this podcast, but it's the nature of what we do. Eric Stahl, man. You know, since we're talking about stats and, you know, kind of faceoffs and stuff, he's been horrible. I don't know the exact split stat for Eric Stahl on the season since joining the Habs, but I know he was above 50% in Buffalo and he's now below 50% in Montreal. Yeah. So he has 3 points in 39 games. He has barely produced anything. He's a $3.5 million cap hit.
And if I'm being honest with you, I think it really stems down to there's just no true spot for him.
And I don't think that.
And there's no movement.
He has it left, right? He doesn't have what Corey Perry has left.
I don't think he's far away. You know, we saw a 2016-2017 season. He still had it. Granted, that's just a couple years back. But I just don't think that there's a legit spot where he can regain that composure other than the fourth line. And he's not line player. And, you know, our buddy Butter Hoppy told us that. And, you know, it's come to fruition. You know, I can't wait to fuck with him when we go on his podcast one day. Because, I mean, he was relatively right. He had a great idea. He said, I just don't think he's going to excel in the fourth line. He's not that type of player.
And I agree. Like, I totally agree with what you're saying. And I want to say, like, I wasn't thrilled with the acquisition, but I'm pretty sure I spoke positively.
We took it with a grain of salt, but we understood he was going to be a veteran, and that was maybe something we needed. We were losing centers.
What I think Marc Bergevin failed to realize, or maybe he just didn't care, is that when you're bringing in Eric Stahl, not only you're log jamming a position that was already log jammed for guys like Kotkaniemi, right?
You're telling Kotkaniemi mainly, and then Jake Evans, sadly, to go fuck himself. Like,
but with KK, he already had Danault in front of him,
mm-hmm,
and Suzuki. So you're already kind of – it's a tricky situation there, right? But when you add Eric Stahl, not only are you – you know, he's going to get time when you first acquire him, but Dominic Ducharme as a rookie coach has to deal with quite a few future Hall of Famers, Triple Gold Club members, Eric Stahl and Corey Perry. Carey Price hopefully one day will be a part of that, right? Whether that's with the Habs or not. Shea Weber is a Hall of Famer. Carey Price is a Hall of Famer. Both those guys I just mentioned, that, you know, that's four guys. I think Weber probably the least of them all, but three that are pretty much, well, locks for the Hall, right? I think that's fair. Like, I don't think that's absurd to say.
It's not out of pocket.
I think Price and Perry definitely are locks for the Hall.
100%.
Eric Stahl, I think, is probably going to go to the Hall. And I think Weber will get in eventually. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to my point, if you're Dominic Ducharme, you're a rookie coach, you're going to scratch Eric Stahl? Like,
right. He basically got thrown a fucking puzzle box from like a daycare that's got pieces from like multiple puzzles in it, you know, like, and this dude's trying to fucking fix this puzzle that's fucking got like, you know, pieces for a 500, you know, puzzle set in a fucking 25 children's version, you know, like, it's a mess. And, you know, there's a lot of Ducharme hate. What can you do as a rookie coach and get thrown in? And Bergevin is basically looked like he was playing fantasy hockey, right? He saw all these acquisitions and just started scooping up everybody who was fucking, you know, in the top 50, you know, in the league. And not saying that that's what these guys were, you know, but like, you know, you're in a deep league, you see all these additives you can bring in. He brought in too much. And guess what? It kind of fucked with the lineup to the point to where it's straining Kotkaniemi and, like you said, like Evans and fucking, you know, Cole Caulfield has a stance.
I do. Like, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. And we talk a lot about, like, in the playoffs, like, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Like, I agree with what you're saying. And I think in the playoffs, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with those lines, right? Because you're going to have a lot of guys coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like the end of fucking Avengers Endgame with like all the portals.
And everyone's like, fucking available. And you're just like,
everyone,
fuck.
It's like Gallagher, like everyone's coming back. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the lines. Because, you know, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. And you're not focused on youth. You want to win. So I have absolutely no clue what's going to happen to the playoffs. I really don't. I said before I wanted Allen to ride it out. I might even still be on that bandwagon, to be honest. We'll see how Price – if Price doesn't get a regular season game in, I don't want him in. But he will be in. Don't get me wrong.
He will.
There is no chance in hell Carey Price doesn't start in the playoffs if he's healthy. He will be in, but I personally think he needs a game in the regular season at least. But I guess moving, because I'm kind of way off topic here, but it just came into my mind. And before I forget, I don't think Montreal, like I said, without Deneau, is going to succeed. And I want to talk about that more because not only are we heading into a contract year for Philip Deneau, which is important, we're also heading into an offseason in which Marc Bergevin's future should be anything but certain. And I think the two ride hand in hand together. I think if Montreal beats the Leafs this year, Marc Bergevin's going to keep his job. I really do think so. If this team,
I think any GM, you know, if you beat the Leafs with this team right now and this and the problems that we've had, I think you kind of cash a chicken.
Especially since when you look at the way he constructed it, it hasn't worked well in practice. The Leafs are 7-3 against us or something. 7-2-1.
Yeah,
7-3. But I do think Marc Bergevin built this team to tackle teams like them. I think that was his vision when building this team. They haven't played that way at all. It hasn't worked. So I think it'll be so exciting to beat the Leafs, but also I don't want it to validate him in a way.
Right.
So, but if Philip Deneau is not in the lineup,
that's a tough hill.
I really don't think it matters how well Nick Suzuki plays or Kotkaniemi. If they reach their ultimate potential somehow, possibly, but you're not, even if offensively they start tearing it up, you will not go shot for shot against the Toronto Maple Leafs. If it turns into an offensive series, which is the only way I think, you know, those young guys are going to want to play regardless of Nick Suzuki's defensive prowess, I don't think you win. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, Nick Suzuki's been fucking amazing, phenomenal, one of our best players lately, if not the best. But at the end of the day, you know, we thought, and we discussed it a lot, and I've got taken a really roundabout way of getting here, so I apologize, but we discussed at the start of the season that at the end, Philip Deneau was probably going to be our third line center. And I'm here saying that Philip Deneau is still the best center on our team. He's our number one center.
Yeah.
You can disagree with me, maybe. Like, I don't know how you feel about this, but I just think when I look at it that way,
if you look at the paper, right? And I mean, it's kind of tough because, like, when you hear about, you know, like people like Nathan MacKinnon saying, you know, like, The most aggravating person to go up against is Philip Deneau. Yeah, you know, I think he's just had more time in the league. He excels at that, you know, that bothersome, you know, role. He's a sulky candidate, but I don't think Nick Suzuki and KK has had that much of a chance to do that. But in games like Saturday, when you can really tell that he's gone, it kind of shows like, hey, like, you know, these young kids are really great, but there's still something that's missing, right? And I think that our final game against Toronto really kind of proved that, you know, that he still deserves that front spot, that top, you know, the first line center. Sorry, I'm just kind of had a fucking brain fart. I think the boards are coming up. I think it's out of question that they will make that jump. But as of right now, I think you're right. You know, in the beginning of the season, we might have thought otherwise. But I think this team had a tough season. Philip Deneau definitely had a tough season, and I think he's.
Really, I don't know if he has though. I think offensively he struggled a lot at the start of the year. Do you still need more than 5 goals from Philip Deneau? Yes.
But, yeah, but defensively he was still kind of there. Like there was moments in the beginning where evidently he wasn't, right. Based on his analytics, and I didn't know it was that strong until we looked at the Jay Fresh stuff. Shout out Jay Fresh. It really proves that, like, he could be quiet offensively and still be as dominant as he can be, and you just don't fucking notice it, you know, or it just goes over your head because you're upset he's not scoring that much. But as bad as this team has been this season, and how quietly good he's been shows that he still deserves the first spot now, right now, not forever, you know, but at least going into next season, he's got to sit at least one or two. And two is only because you're thinking Nick Suzuki can really make a break for it next season. And, you know, and they kind of share, like we were talking in the beginning, that 1A, 1B role.
I firmly believe that Philip Deneau is a must sign player in the offseason. I think Montreal fans, media, even maybe the own organization, I think part of it is they recognize how good he is and see him as a roadblock for KK and Suzuki. Well, first of all, the only roadblock in KK's development is Dominic Ducharme right now. It's not allowing him to make mistakes. It's not allowing him to play. And I don't want to hear the bullshit about trying to get into the playoffs because it's been all fucking season.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a new coach. You need a Joel Bouchard, okay? A guy who I really do think long-term it would serve us best to keep him in our AHL developing our prospects. But that guy is going to be an NHL coach soon, and I don't want to lose him.
Right.
So keep in mind, this is an interim tag for Dominic Ducharme. He's not the guy. If you want to keep him in your organization, you still can. Joel Bouchard, I think, has to be strongly considered for
right, the head coach. Right, like being bred as of now. Create the depth of our youth, bring them up, and then how amazing is it?
And then he's going to coach them in the NHL.
Yeah, and they're already comfortable with him. They know how he plays. They know what he expects. You know, it's
part of the Toronto approach with Keefe too, right?
Right.
And but going back to Deneau, I don't think this team is built to play without him because they're so reliant on him. As phenomenal defensively as Nick Suzuki is, he cannot and hasn't yet. Maybe he will in his prime, but I think with his offensive ability, you don't want him shutting down guys. You want him scoring, right? Deneau can just there aren't a lot of centers that do what Deneau does to the ability that he does it. Sean Couturier is definitely one of them. Bergeron in his heyday. Like, Deneau's special, and I think he's got to be a priority. I think this team, for a long time, Montreal has always been weak down the middle. To this day, really. Like, we're not still on a strong team down the middle. But it's going to be a position of strength very shortly. Why do you want to get rid of some of that? You know, we've been craving this for so long. I don't think, plainly, don't know if you've listened to Habs Tonight with Dale Weiss. He's got a podcast going. I've listened to other, you know, NHL players talk about it. Dale Weiss especially said, there's no way in hell Phil would have turned down that $5 million contract. He said he doesn't know for sure. But right. This is a guy who, how long did they play together? 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I don't, and the reports were never confirmed. We've seen a lot of backlash from it, but people run with the first thing they hear. I don't think Philip Deneau turned down a $5 million AAV contract, especially in this climate, seeing what Toffoli's making. I don't think he turned that down. So I think it's a priority for Bergevin or whoever we have heading into the offseason to sign this guy. I think this team, when you look at, you know, we're talking about playing the Leafs, I think he's the most important player in that series.
No, you're right. And I guess to just double back on it, this team has always struggled offensively. And yeah, granted, we would have loved to see more offensively from Philip Deneau this season. But, you know, what I've noticed is that just this, you know, one game since he's been gone, we really can't afford to not have him there play defensively. So if he's not there, period, whether it's injury or he's not even on the team anymore, we're taking a huge step back into, I wouldn't say a rebuild, but like fixing our defensive, you know, forward energy, I guess. I don't think this team can move forward, not just in the playoffs, but, you know, I don't think we can move into next season without Deneau, without really, really having a rough go of it again. I have to eat my words, because in the beginning I was so upset with Deneau's performance, and then to close out the season and realize that he did his game. He played the exact way he could, just the, you know, the offensive side didn't catch wind for him, didn't catch fire. So what? But now that he's gone, one game noticing it, yeah. I mean, it is the Leafs who's fucking on a, you know, on a tear, but we're gonna notice it in the playoffs that he's not there. And hopefully that shuts up a lot of fucking stands on Twitter and our fan base that's just kind of a little too hard on him based off of, like you're saying, evidence that we don't know if he said he turned down that five. You know, I don't think he doesn't like to play here. I think he got a chance to play here, and he excelled at it. You know, who wants to leave a top franchise, one of the best markets, and then play a top role in the rebuilding and consistency of this team? It's I don't know, man. I love that Jay Fresh can just fucking blow my fucking mind like that, though. I tell you,
I don't think it really blew my mind, though, because when playing Edmonton, you know, people are gonna go, oh, McDavid still got a point, whatever. Like,
yeah, well, McDavid's fucking unreal.
McDavid's fucking McDavid. What's your goddamn point? As far as I'm concerned, if you held Gretzky in his heyday to 2 or 3 points, you were doing your
job. You did your job.
Like,
the fact that we did like what, 4 games without giving McDavid or Draisaitl a point,
yeah,
kind of speaks volumes.
They're,
you know,
gonna get their points. Is my, like, look at how many they got in total with Deneau on the ice. I bet you it's not that many, because a lot of the time when, right after I said that, I got tweeted a bit. But for half the points, it was like Evans or someone else on the ice, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't even fucking Deneau. So that's a big contract extension, or just contract in general, that's going to be talked about going into the offseason. But another one, and we got reports from Elliot Friedman that there are discussions going on with Molson and Bergevin about his future at the organization. Now, I'm so fucking hopeful that it's not a contract extension.
Whose future?
Bergevin's.
Okay.
I hope it's not a contract extension. He doesn't deserve one. I'm really torn, and I kind of want to save this for our
Wednesday.
Yeah, our little tease at a possible collaboration we're working towards for Wednesday. So we'll keep that a little quieter, but I do want to just talk about it a little bit, because while it's still fresh, I just want to know what your thoughts are. Like, how
give them the 30-minute Resident Evil demo, bud.
how tired, how done are you with Bergevin? Are you at the breaking point? Are you kind of
I'll say I'm at an if, right? And I was all on the Bergevin train, right? But this free agency just stretch that we kind of just got through has kind of dulled me a little bit to it. If he gets moved, yeah, I'll be a little upset. I like the moves he's made in the past. Some of them I didn't like, you know, we obviously know that, but I think I'm in the boards, but I'm more on like, if he got moved, I would understand it. You know, I wouldn't be as like, this is bullshit.
Yeah. So,
I know you're ready. You fucking.
I don't know. I guess my issue is that I was a firm believer in the Bergevin plan, and I loved his offseason, and that's the problem. I think all of his offseason acquisitions have been amazing. I know people have been getting on Josh Anderson as of late, but his fucking.
Okay, 100% guaranteed he's playing still hurt.
Yeah, and his role is to throw the body and score goals, which he's done at a 32.
Decimated at fucking over 100 hits, I believe, this season.
Oh, well over. So I don't know. I'm not sure. We'll discuss it more next week. Moving on to, I guess, the next topic would be our game on Edmonton tomorrow, as when this episode's coming out.
Yes, it'll be our last little bit. So we got it's so crazy to think that we got two games left. I was blown away when I got on Twitter while I was editing the other day, and people like Saturday, and people being like, like Sporty, you know, like Corey and Richie being like, all right, that's the end of the season. I'm like, are you fucking serious? Are we already here? But yeah, Monday, 7 p.m. Edmonton, and then Wednesday, Edmonton. That's it. That's it for us.
Yeah, so our last two games, it's almost a formality that we'll be playing the Leafs now. Unless there is a scenario if Winnipeg drops their next two and we win both of ours. It could happen, and I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter at this point with Deneau being gone. Before, I was hopeful because Deneau against McDavid and Draisaitl, but
yeah,
you know, whoever we play, I think it's going to be really interesting. And I guess we'll just get towards the end here and just get some predictions from you. Like, what do you think? What do you think the lineup's going to look like tonight for those listening when this comes out? So the Monday game.
Well, fuck. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't even touch anything. If I'm being honest, I don't. I think Eric Staal is gonna. You know, you can't. There's no movements you can make as far as that. I think last two games into the season, they probably won't touch anything. I don't think. I think they'll just let it run as it's been.
So you think KK is gonna be back on that second first line with, was it Tatar and Anderson? I didn't watch enough of the game too.
Yeah, I would hope so.
And
I just think because it's just the last two.
So you don't shake it up. You don't think we're gonna shake it up at all?
I don't think so. I think if we were gonna shake it up, it would have been after the 5-2 loss to Toronto, and then go into, our 2-3, you know, our 3-2 loss. But at this point, it's two games left. Don't make it harder on our team to get adjusted by bringing a brand new. There's been so much jumbling this entire season, especially this back end of it. Don't fuck with it. Just let it happen. You know, you're going into a monstrous Edmonton team who Connor McDavid just fucking, I mean, he had one game out of 10 where he scored zero, had 0 points, and every other game was at least 3 or 4. He, you know, got 100 points Saturday night. I think that rig is going to keep fucking rolling. And I think it's going to be a tough one for us. So why even play with the lines? Let that be somewhat a bit of consistency right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I don't know if I think we're going to have the same lines. I think Ducharme's style seems to be put KK in a blender with some random wingers and let's see what happens. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him out there with two guys. Somehow Ducharme will find two guys that he's never played with.
Right.
And we'll see what happens. But my ideal look would be, I don't want to break up that Toffoli line, or sorry, that Toffoli Suzuki line. I think they've been phenomenal. I got to see KK with Cole. If you fail to put those two together, I think it's just pathetic.
Yeah. Mine's based off of just pure laziness, I guess. Just being, we've been fucking so hit or miss. Just finish it out as is. Fuck, I would drop Stahl down to the fucking fourth, bring up Evans, and just put Evans, KK. I mean, Evans, Caulfield, and Perry, and just let it run like that. That'd be my only want of change, because Evans has once again proven that, you know, fourth line, yeah, he's phenomenal.
He's a third line guy. He's a future third line star center, if that makes sense. Like,
I get what you're saying.
When Deneau is critical
when needed, definitely on the dot. And if Eric Stahl comes in and does a 15%er, I think there's a definite case for Jake Evans' youthfulness to come up and play with a youthful Cole Caulfield and a very talented, very refreshed Corey Perry.
I do like that line of Lehkonen, Evans, and Caulfield, though.
Mm-hmm.
Lecky's played phenomenally lately, by the way. I don't know if we've talked about him enough. So is Armia, but Lehkonen just
playing for his fucking job, you know?
Yeah, really. And I think Evans, his forecheck ability matched with Evans' IQ and Caulfield's just raw talent has just been, they've been a fun third line to watch.
100%. And, you know, I understand that they have Armia with Suzuki and Toffoli. Armia, we know, obviously can shine when he's on it. But I definitely understand why, you know, Caulfield is down, you know, not on that line, just to kind of give some type of spark with a Corey Perry or a Lehkonen. That's not Armia, you know. But like I said, my only want of change would be to drop Stahl to the fourth, let it just happen, bring up Evans. He definitely deserves it. Close out the season on a good note, at least for our young centers, you know. Deneau's not here, you know, so let's finally let these centers run wild and get a shot.
Yeah.
I do love KK with Tatar and Anderson, though. Love it. And I just hate it, you know. We're seeing the Galchenyuk shuffle with KK, and it's time for them to lock him in somewhere and just be like, hey, fucking just get used to it. We won't do this to you anymore.
Yeah, I think we'll leave that for next week because I want to talk about it at the end of the season. We'll see what happens. If they give him a chance, I might be less critical. But I'm definitely frustrated, to say the least, and I'm sure he is with his development. But anyway, I think that's going to wrap things up today. We're kind of starting to ramble on a little bit. Do you have anything else you wanted to say? Because it is your episode, so I guess I'll have to close this out.
Yeah, I do have to close this. I am addicted to the show. It's bad. I'm so fucking addicted to that game. And I lost in fantasy hockey. That's it. I fucking got skull dragged.
I took a dub, so.
Dude, this would have been my fourth year winning in a row. I've been dynasty era good, you know. And I got squashed. But no, we can end it there. Folks, thank y'all so much for listening. Please follow us at Habs Nightly on Twitter and Bayou Vendors. We want to do a little bit more stuff involving you guys soon, and we're going to try to evolve that into something in the near future. But please, thank y'all so much for listening, and we'll talk to y'all next time.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network.
New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
What's up, everybody? This is Taylor and Brendan from Straight Up Sabres of the Hockey Podcast Network. Things are not going very well in Saberland this season, or really for the past 10 years or so. However, we here at Straight Up Sabres are so excited to keep bringing you guys the latest Sabres news, with everything ranging from interviews with some of your favorite Twitter follows all the way up to former players and everything in between. We have got you covered with your weekly coverage of the Buffalo Sabres.
That's right. We got a lot coming up through the rest of the season and into the offseason. Who's going to coach the team next year? Is Kevin Adams going to have a new boss? Will he be a president of hockey operations? Will there be an assistant GM? Are they going to fill out their scouting staff? How many times will I cry next season? Maybe zero. I'm dead inside. Will Jack Eichel be here? Sam Reinhart going to get extended? You know, all this and more on Straight Up Sabres.
Exciting stuff. So make sure you're checking us out wherever you're listening to podcasts and following us on social media, on Facebook and Instagram at Straight Up Sabres, and on Twitter at Straight Sabres.